Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
Hey! Coast to coast, no matter what time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting caught up on everything you might have missed over the weekend. 800-224-2004. Call the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Yeah. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. But if you don't want to call, give me a call in. That's totally cool. You can slide into the DMs at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. What a fun hour we have planned ahead. Michael, it was a great weekend. The wonderful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass I might bring up. Got so much to discuss. The Los Angeles Rams, it feels like now, maybe we're underrating them because of the injury concerns. I'm going to explain to you why we shouldn't be doing that. The New York Mets are proving, once again, as I said at the very start of the year, they could be the team to beat in baseball. And, of course, it is Monday, which means it's back to NFL conversations. We are doing my top 10 NFL breakout players of 2022. Not going to want to miss that in about 30 minutes. But I start the hour off today with this. Do you ever wonder, like, when you see a concert and you don't really know the artist completely because of, let's be real, they don't really release a lot of music. But then you end up loving everything about it. So that's kind of what I went through this past weekend. In Houston, Garth Brooks, the wonderful, the legendary Garth Brooks, comes and plays at NRG Stadium. Now, for me personally, I grew up a huge country fan. Garth was very hard for someone who doesn't buy CDs to download. Now, if you don't know this about me, and if you don't know this about Garth, Garth does not allow his music to be aired or streamed on YouTube, on Spotify, or on iTunes. You got to buy the album version to go listen to Garth. And as somebody who's on the younger side, definitely not in the older spectrum, I didn't get to go ahead and buy some albums. But when you go and sit down inside of a stadium setting, and you just close your eyes and listen, and then watch a man who's in his mid to late 50s party like there's no tomorrow, I understand the vibe. I do. By the way, that was always funny. When I was growing up, I loved the song Calling Baton Rouge, and then I went to Alabama, and it's like our rival song. But then when you hear it live, you just go to yourself, it's so much worth it. One day, Alabama.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
He would be way better equipped to talk about it than I would, Jordan, in terms of, all right, do you ever really feel totally great after you've played this much football? But the goal is to try to get him to feel as good as possible, and especially when you're talking about something with that throwing elbow. And this is the plan that we feel best about. But it is something that, you know, I've never navigated through, you know, as a coach with a quarterback. You know, you've had little elbow things here and there, but this is something that we want to, you know, be as smart as possible, and it's taken a big team to try to do that.
That being Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay talking about the potential injury that's being suffered by Matthew Stafford going to the start of the preseason. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Let's talk about it. Cole Thompson right here on Just Saying It, part of the Sports Map Radio Network. So there feels like added pressure for a team like Los Angeles going into this year. And for a certain extent, there should be. Now, to me personally, I don't view this as added pressure, but there's a reason for it, and I'll explain in a second. But for those of you who do think that there is added pressure for Los Angeles, I probably know the reason why. Well, they're the Super Bowl champions. They're the coup de grace of the NFL. They're the top of the list. They're at the biggest spot of the food chain. They're the team that everyone is trying to reach. They're the team that everyone is trying to be. They're the next Los Angeles Rams. They're the next L.A. The reality factor is that there always should be a level of expectation for a Sean McVay-led team. Since he became the head coach of the organization back in 2017, they've never had a losing season. I talk often about the success of what we've seen from Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh and what we've seen from a few other coaches like Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, and how when certain aspects of his game and his offense don't work, it's just an absolute dumpster fire. But for Los Angeles, they've always been competitive and combative. You know, when you think about it, Jared Goff was drafted in 2016 to work with Jeff Fisher. 1 year later, we're talking about Goff actually being a very serviceable quarterback. And part of the reason why I think it's almost impossible for me to give up on Goff is because of everything that I saw with him in Sean McVay's system. But at the same time, it's the exact same thing with Matthew Stafford. Stafford elemented his overall game in Detroit. Now he goes out to L.A. He wins a Super Bowl. They come into this year. They're not really missing much. In fact, they're basically the same team minus one or two players, and then maybe upgrade at those positions to where you feel content at this team needing to go into this year as the favorites with 12-plus wins, 13-plus wins. Here's the thing. There's two areas that you need to look at with Sean McVay and why I'm not really worried about Matthew Stafford. Now, is it a concern? Sure. I mean, tendonitis is a big deal. But number one, the guy is physical as all hell. I mean, if you've ever heard his story and ever gone back and really paid attention to what he did and what he had to battle through and all the ups and downs that he had to envision during his tenure in Detroit, you know that he's capable of beating anything. I mean, does anyone remember the time that he separated his shoulder on a play getting sacked, but they had one more drive on it, and he said, nope, I'm going to go back out there. I'm going to throw a touchdown. As time expires, we'll go worry about my shoulder later. Like, that's the level of intensity that a guy like Matthew Stafford plays through on the regular. Tendonitis in his elbow or tendonitis in his shoulder is not really going to bother him. Yes, it is painful, and yes, it is a problem to think worry about long term, but it's not something that people should be going over the walls, oh my goodness, is this really happening kind of thing. And if you don't believe me, well, apparently this was an issue that picked up mid-season last year, and Stafford played through the pain. Sounds like the right quarterback you need in the building. Number two, and this is probably the bigger of the two, Sean McVay doesn't play his starters in the preseason. In fact, if you go back and look at the notion of what we've seen in probably the last two or three years, starters used to play more than a series or more than a quarter in game two during the preseason. They would play about a series or two in game one. They'd usually play about a quarter in game two. And then in game three, when we had four preseason games, that would be like the final audition. They'd play anywhere between 15 to 30 minutes. They'd play all the way up into the second half. And a lot of people thought, okay, this is the proper way to go about this. And to me personally, I get it. I understand why you want to go ahead and do that. But Sean McVay changed the narrative by saying, I'm not playing starters. No Jared Goff, no Todd Gurley, no Robert Woods, no Cooper Kupp, no Rob Havenstein, no Andrew Whitworth, no Jalen Ramsey, and teams started to follow that notion. So you already know that Matthew Stafford was not going to play this upcoming season. You already knew that Matthew Stafford was not going to be active for the preseason. He was going to be on the sideline. He was going to be holding the clipboard. He was going to be giving notes to guys like John Walford and Bryce Perkins, trying to figure out, hey, this is what you're missing. Let's go ahead and fix this next time. He was going to be a coach. That was it. So what you're doing now is you're giving him time to rest, and you're giving him time to figure out what is the right move with his shoulder. But here's the other thing. Stafford even talked about it. He said that going into this year, you know, he played through the pain last year, and that now he understands what he needs to do to make sure that this doesn't linger that much longer.
I'm just going through something that is irritating, you know, at the moment. But I'm working through it. We got a great plan. I'm feeling stronger every time I come out here and throw. I don't know if you guys were watching, felt like I could make any throw I wanted to today. And just trying to be smart when I get those opportunities and make sure I can come out here, cut it loose, turn it loose, like I did today, and go from there.
The other thing that I will take away from Los Angeles more than anything else, the consistency factor of what Sean McVay expects in his players, preseason is the time to actually be injured. And I said this at the very start of the segment, and I'll continue to say it, this is a team that isn't losing much. When you look at Super Bowl rosters, 9 times out of 10, they lose a marquee player. And yes, this team did in Andrew Whitworth, but they didn't lose him to free agency or they didn't lose him to another roster, you know, in the NFC. No, what they did was they lost him to the likes of retirement, because he is 40, and he is a guy that is getting up there in age, and he was a guy that people said for a very long time could be done at any given moment, and look at that, He was. But besides that, this is basically the same team. And the areas of where you didn't return certain players, Odell Beckham Jr., Robert Woods, it's because if you added other names to replace them. Allen Robinson, arguably, is still a top 25 receiver when fully healthy and in the right system. He's never really had that because if you look at his quarterback play since his time at Penn State, Christian Hackenberg, Blake Bortles, Mitch Trubisky, even Justin Fields, in a sense, because he was a rookie, still trying to figure out where he belongs, you now add him to a roster of Matthew Stafford. Guess what? He's at least a very, very, very high number two, if not a low-tier number one. But he doesn't even have to be the number one on this roster because of what you have with the guy in Cooper Kupp. The factor for me is when I look right now at this organization, I'm not that concerned about a guy like Stafford missing time. If there's anybody who is allowed to miss time, in my opinion, it is Stafford. Because Stafford is a player who has shown time and time again, he'll play through adversity, he'll play through the pain, and he'll force his way to stay active and a part of the system. He's not going to miss much. He's really not. But there is going to be a little bit of a target now on Los Angeles' back to where any single time a player gets injured, a Van Jefferson, a Allen Robinson, a Jordan Fuller, a Ernest Jones, the other linebacker, not Bobby Wagner, the other guy. Oh boy, here's the regression. Got Michael, strap in. Here comes regression time. No, that's not the case. When you look right now at what Los Angeles has, this is actually okay. But I will say, it is something to keep a close eye on. I'm not worried about Matthew Stafford. If I don't see him regress in week one against Buffalo, I don't think there's reason to be worried about Matthew Stafford. But overall, people try to make a big deal out of little things, and the main reason why, because of number one, they're bored, and number two, there's an expectation. The reality factor is, for me, there's been an expectation since Sean McVay's first season in Los Angeles, when he was able to take a team that looked like a dumpster fire underneath the multiple coaches, Steve Spagnuolo, Jeff Fisher, there's a few other that I know I'm blanking on, took them to the playoffs. And afterward, they never had a losing season. In fact, they've only had 1 year where they finished with less than double-digit wins. I'm not worried about Matthew Stafford. I'm certainly not worried about LA going into this year. Playoffs are interesting to me, and the one thing that I will always say is there seems to be a sleeper that loves to crash the party. 800-224-2004. This segment brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. So, going into this year, there's certain teams and there's certain franchises that we expect to make the playoffs. I'll go through it in the AFC real fast because it is highly competitive. The NFC is a little bit more wide open, but in the AFC, you're expecting teams like the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, the Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson, Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati Bengals, Indianapolis Colts, Tennessee Titans, and the entire AFC West, because I'm not going to go ahead and name all four teams, to be in that race. You expect those teams to be vying for a playoff spot. To me, every single year, there's one or two teams that loves just to go ahead and play spoiler. I'll give you a perfect example. Last year, with everything Derek Carr, my sweet, sweet Derek Carr, I see Michael rolling his head on the other side of the glass, losing his mind. When you look at this team, they should not have made the postseason. Instead, they did. They forced their way into a playoff spot. They beat the likes of Los Angeles, and now are viewed as an actual playoff contender. So who are those teams this year going into the AFC and NFC? I'll start off with the AFC because I think it's very clear. To me, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers absolutely can be a playoff team. And if you don't believe me, look at how they're built. They have the right head coach. They have a brilliantly run organization. Whether or not Kevin Colbert is still the GM, guess what? They brought in a guy that they absolutely love in the front office, and Omar Khan, who's been there for years and years and years and understands not just the speculation, but also understands what you're looking for in productive play. The other thing that I really like about them is I love that they have a good, balanced roster when it comes to the receiving corps. They have Deontay Johnson locked up. He's not missing any time. The pick of George Pickens is actually, in my opinion, an upgrade over Juju Smith-Schuster. And they also have another young guy in Calvin Austin who can do a little bit of everything. Not to mention Chase Claypool is still on staff. And Pat Freiermuth, who is a very, very, very good tight end and emerging, is back on your roster. Plus, you also have a 1,000-yard runner and a guy who has been productive immensely since coming out of Alabama in Najee Harris. The one thing stopping Pittsburgh is its offensive line, and they kind of upgraded with that. Mason Cole and James Daniels, and it allows Kendrick Green to move back to his natural guard spot. And you also have a young guy in Dan Moore who's hopefully taking over at left tackle. And then you have the right coach with Mike Tomlin, who's never had a losing season. The right amount of schedule and the right quarterback play from Mitch Trubisky, who's been to the playoffs with Chicago, or Kenny Pickett, who has the most potential, I think, for year one quarterbacks. Who's to say that they can't win 10 games, 11 games, maybe get some upsets over Cincinnati and Baltimore and Cleveland, and fight their way into a wild card spot? 800-224-2004 as we head out to the Progressive guest line and are joined by Thunderman in Oklahoma City wanting to talk NFL sleepers. Thunderman, what you got, man?
Oh, just working tonight. How you doing, Cole?
Very good, Thunderman. How you doing?
I'm doing better than I deserve, as always. So no complaints. Just thankful to be talking to somebody else that loves sports, maybe more so than I'd even do. But, yeah, I wanted to chirp in on your NFL sleepers. I got a couple of picks. Got one for the NFC and one for the AFC.
Who you got?
Let's see what you think. Well, definitely taking a risk with my AFC one. Well, with both of them, really. But I'm going to go with the New York Jets. I think everybody's kind of paying too much attention to Tua and his new weapons. But Zach Wilson got that dog in him. And guys like to play for dudes that have that dog in him. So I think he's going to make a huge step up this year. And then the Seattle Seahawks. I think DK Metcalf is going to hold Drew Lock a lot. No matter how good he really is, I think DK is good enough, just like a Randy Moss back in the day. Maybe not, you know, one of the Hall of Fame receivers. I apologize if I'm speaking too soon. But, you know, again, he can do a lot. So I wanted to see what you thought about that and see who else you had and what you had to say about it.
800-224-2004, always calling to the show. Appreciate you, Thunderman, for joining us. I actually like both those picks. I almost went with the likes of the New York Jets, but I don't think that you have it with Seattle. The NFC team for me, and real fast before we got to go commercial break, is the Detroit Lions. I absolutely love everything that the Detroit Lions did this offseason. Number one, they win in the trenches. They have a very good offensive line and a very good defensive line. On both sides of the football, those are aspects you need. And the addition of Aiden Hutchinson only strengthens it, like the addition of Penei Sewell only strengthened the O-line last year. The receiving core is out of its mind good when on point. DJ Chark is going to impress everyone this year, and Jameson Williams, when he's healthy, is great. The two aspects I think we really need to see take the next step, better quarterback play from Jared Goff, and I think that he can do that, and better overall defensive play. If you get a really good defensive backfield, you're set up for immense success. And the NFC North especially, is pretty open. Really think about it outside of Green Bay. It's pretty open. Keep a close eye on the Detroit Lions. Coming up next, let's talk about the New York Mets and the return of Jacob deGrom. Are they baseball's best team? Well, we're going to find out right here on Just Saying It, part of the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
With their newest unlimited plan, everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for up to four lines with autopay plus taxes and fees. Their best price unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family, the network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible for only select promotions. Include domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. So we usually don't talk a lot about baseball, but guess what? We are moving into that because if we have to add in a few more elements to the show, I'm not just a college football guy. I'm not just an NFL guy. I know that those are the two things that sell, and I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, when it gets closer to the season, we're going to be talking about that nonstop. But right now, because there is a little bit of a downside, or there is a little bit of downtime would probably be a better wording for it, let's talk a little bit of baseball. And I don't really want to talk that much baseball. I want to talk about one team, and one team alone, because if I have to, I want to talk about the New York Mets. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Let's talk about it. So the Mets get a monumental win yesterday. They're now 70-35 on the season, hitting the 5-2 victory over the Atlanta Braves. But there's two things that I want to talk about. Let's go with the first thing. Number one, the return of Jacob DeGrom. Since coming back from injury, the man has been on point. Well, don't believe me? Let's just look at his last start. He went 5 innings, allowed 3 hits, 1 earned run, and struck out 6, finishing with an ERA of 1.80. And then in yesterday's game against the Atlanta Braves, the one team threatening for the NL East title, he was untouchable. And by all means, I mean the word untouchable. I don't throw it around just saying it, oh, well, you know, let's use it as like a sports analogy. No, the man literally almost didn't allow a damn thing to happen. In fact, through 5 2/3 innings, he had a perfect game. And in fact, you want to go a step further, of the 17 batters he first faced, 12 ended in strikeouts. He finished the afternoon with 12 strikeouts, 2 earned runs allowed, unfortunately, due to the home run. But he also allowed just one hit, one total hit. And on top of all that, he had a 76% strikeout. I mean, a 76% strike rate. So almost 4/5 of his balls that he was throwing were right down the pipe. And no one on the roster could hit it. No one. You couldn't get it from Dansby Swanson, who's been on fire this year. You couldn't get it from Max Olson. You couldn't get it from Austin Riley, just earned a massive extension. Couldn't get it from Ronald Acuna, William Contreras, Robbie Grossman, all these guys. They were on point. And when you look right now as how good you've seen Jacob DeGrom this year, in 69 innings and in 11 starts against the Braves at Citi Field, he has a 1.30 ERA. Why is that important? Because when the playoffs come around and there is a potential matchup between Atlanta and New York, this is in favor of the New York Mets. To be quite honest, ladies and gentlemen, everyone said to me when I picked the New York Mets to be the number one seed. Everyone remember that last week? Michael was sitting in here. I know he remembers it. We were talking about playoff seeding and where I think the Mets are going to be. Well, they didn't make enough moves at the deadline. Well, they were really quiet. Well, the moves that they made were very minor. You guys do realize that they didn't have to make a lot of moves because Steve Cohen in the offseason made sure his team was so well put together, there wasn't going to be that case. He added in guys like Starling Marte to play in the outfield and a guy like Mark Cannon to play in the outfield. And you also added in another player like Brandon Nimmo. And you brought in a guy in Jeff McNeil. And you made sure that you also added in a few other pitchers, guys like Chris Bassett from the Oakland Athletics. And you put yourself in a situation to where right now, you didn't have to worry about adding in all these pieces because simply put, where was the hole? I mean, if you really think about it, where was the hole? The biggest one, probably an extra left-handed bat, and you added that in Dan Vogelbach. You added that, who, by the way, is hitting .239 and is moving for a 280-pound man like there's no one's business. Like, the man is absolutely flying around the bases, making fat baseball players look awesome. The New York Mets are absolutely here to stay. And not only are they here to stay, that's the first thing I want to say. They may be the biggest threat in the NL. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I know what San Diego did this offseason. I know what San Diego did the trade deadline. I know what the Los Angeles Dodgers are. And I completely respect my own theory. My own theory, because I've talked about this nonstop, that I believe that the St. Louis Cardinals are going to have an opportunity to win simply because of all the players that are retiring. But if you look at this organization that is finding ways to win at the plate, they have immense discipline. On top of that, their base running is phenomenal. They hit with runners in scoring position. They don't go overreach. They make sure that they keep the bats rolling. A very solid bullpen and a 1-2-3 rotation, fully healthy, of Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, and Chris Bassett. How are you beating this team? The way that they're playing right now can overpower anybody, and that includes Los Angeles, San Diego, and St. Louis. Don't be shocked when we're talking in October and we're looking at the New York Mets not only winning, but hosting a World Series.
You You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
What to make of the term breakout, and is there actually a real thing about being a breakout player? 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Let's talk about it. So, going into this year, I personally believe that there are so many stars who could be looking for that next big story. And a guy, personally, that I am very excited to see are these 10 names. That's how I'm going to do it. 800-224-2004. Here's going to be the game plan. I'm going to talk about players who are going to break out in 2022. They're on rosters that maybe they either didn't have enough reps or the reps that they did have last year were very minute, to say the least. But here's the only kicker. They had to play last year, so anybody who is a rookie, automatically off the list. And number two, I'm not looking for them who are already established. They have to be names that probably are not considered franchise cornerstones just yet. So here we go, my top 10 breakout players for the 2022 season. Michael, let's count them down. Before I go any further, want to give some honorable mentions. Number one, Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles. The guy's been to the playoffs. There's very little I need to see of him. It's just more so a consistency element. If he does that, I think that you have a future in Philadelphia. If not, well, they do have two first-round picks in the next few years. They're going to upgrade at some point. Number two, Rashad Bateman with the likes of the Baltimore Ravens. The one thing that I don't know about him is the consistency element with Lamar Jackson. But now that he is the clear-cut number one receiver in the building with Marquise Brown out in Arizona, there'll be room for potential. Number three, Brevin Jordan of the Houston Texans. Guy was a red zone machine last year when fully healthy. He came in midseason as a starter. He's expected to be in a 12-personnel offense underneath new offensive coordinator Pep Hamilton. So they're going to target him a lot. And everything that I have seen as a guy who covers the Texans for a living is he has been arguably the second biggest growth-developing player this offseason, opposite of Nico Collins and maybe Garrett Wallow. Number four, Travis Etienne. I'd put him on this list, but he didn't play last year. That was the biggest thing. You had to have played snaps last year. But I do think that he is going to be a factor on this team offensively and as a pass catcher at the backfield. And number five, Mecole Hardman of the Kansas City Chiefs. Speed, 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 speed. Guess what he has? Speed, and he's going to be replacing the production of Tyreek Hill. All right, actually moving on into the top 10. Number 10, Patrick Surtain, the second of the Denver Broncos. I know this feels like cheating because he had a really, really, really good year last year, but you know that we're not talking about him just yet as a top 10 consensus cornerback in the NFL. That's going to change after this season. You look at what Denver has defensively. They're changing up their formation a little bit, but his role is not moving whatsoever. Last year, he allowed only 5.7 yards per target, according to Pro Football Reference. Of the 286 qualifying players, only 34 defensive backs were better in that metric. Not only that, he has the size that you're looking for to play on the outside at 6'2". He's got great closing speed, ran a 4.4 40 at his pro day at Alabama, and he's a willing tackler in space. That is something that cornerbacks in today's NFL have to have, and Surtain is willing to play the run. He is willing to go out there, make his body on the line, and show out when possible. He's good in coverage. He's instinctual. There's so much to like about his potential going into year two in the Mile High City. Number eight, Bryan Edwards of the Atlanta Falcons. This one's kind of easy. Name Atlanta's second receiver. Yeah, you can't really do that because they don't have one. That's the one bad thing about Atlanta. They have Kyle Pitts. Insert second guy here. Most people would probably argue it's Drake London, the rookie out of USC, but I think you can make an argument that it is Bryan Edwards. He's proven. He's been around the block. He's been a good possessional receiver as a team's number three option. Now he goes to an organization where he can show off why he is capable of being a good number two or even a really low tier number one. And that's kind of the element that you're looking for. He also has chemistry with Marcus Mariota coming from the Las Vegas Raiders via a trade, and when healthy, he has shown the personality of what is like when he is a very solid overall route runner using his size to his favor. Last season finished with 34 receptions for 571 yards and 3 touchdowns. While he may not be an elite pass catcher, have all these tools and what you're looking for as a number one, He is a stable option. I think going to an organization like Atlanta that is hemorrhaging a need for the likes of a solid wide receiver core gives him the opportunity to step up right away and make an immediate impact. Number 8, Jordan Brooks of the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Brooks is another one of these guys. A couple years ago, he had, if I want to say, I think he actually might have even led the NFL in tackles. That's how good he was. But the thing was about him, he was getting reps opposite of Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner was the go-to guy, and then it was like Jordan Brooks was around. He was meant to replace KJ Wright long-term. Now he has the opportunity to be the three-down thumper in every aspect. Bobby Wagner's now in Los Angeles. He's now the leader of Seattle's defense. And the one thing that I really liked about his film watching him at Texas Tech was in zone coverage, he played extremely well against running backs and tight ends out of the backfield. I think having that kind of potential and what he's able to bring to the table as a more well-rounded linebacker, a space guy, probably helps benefits him a little bit. But you also know that he's very, very, very good against the run. Last season, he was one of the top 5 in tackles. I think he finished with 135. He also had, I think, 11 tackles behind the line of scrimmage for tackles for loss. So he's a three-down type of guy. He can make a lot of plays. I think his coverage ability has been very underrated through his first 2 years in the NFL. Now that he is the go-to guy, there's going to be immense expectation for him to break out right away. And I do think that he can live up to the standard. I really do. I love everything about his game. But more specifically, I love what he brings to the table in terms of overall balance and consistency. Number 7. Sorry about that. Jonathan Grenard, defensive end of the Houston Texans. Grenard really should have had 10 sacks last year, but the problem with him was he suffered an injury late in the season to where he missed like 4 games. So he only played in 12 games last year. But during those 12 games, he had 8.5 sacks, which was a team high for the Texans. He also finished with the lead, team high in tackles for losses with 9.5. So going into this year, he's getting accustomed and acclimated to playing defensive end once again. When he was at Florida, he was a hybrid player. They'd use him as his standing 9 technique. They'd play him with his hand in the dirt as a defensive end. Now in Houston under Lovie Smith, they love playing him with his hand in the dirt. And I can tell you, from watching what he's done at practice so far, he is in for a monumental year. Twice, he's had a little bit of a J.J. Watt clone type system where he's batted down a pass from quarterback Davis Mills and landed it right into his hands. He would have broken free both times for an interception return for a touchdown over 80 yards. He's quick. He's agile. He's got a very good first step that allows him to overpower most offensive tackles. And the other thing that I really like about him is that his consistency is on point. It feels like every single play he is working into the backfield. He is making his presence felt. And if anything else, you know that he is able to stop the run and add pressure into the backfield to a quarterback. So there's a lot to like about Grenard and what his potential is. I really do think that going into this year, he will become the first Texan since J.J. Watt in 2018 to reach double-digit sacks. And if that's going to be the case, he may be earning himself a brand new contract. Number 7. Is it number 7? Oh, no, number 6. My bad. Brandon Ayuk of the San Francisco 49ers. Listen, I really, really, really like what Brandon Ayuk could potentially bring to this roster. The one thing you have to understand about him is that he has been kind of forgot about because of Deebo Samuel, but last season was a very good year for him as well. 56 catches, 826 yards, 5 touchdowns, an average of 14.8 yards per catch. And since entering the league, he has 116 total receptions. He also has an average of 13.6 yards per play and 10 total touchdowns. This is the guy that you can spread the field with. And the one thing that I will admit in favor of Trey Lance over Jimmy Garoppolo, and I'll be the very first to say this, I am a Trey Lance stan. I had him as QB2 behind Trevor Lawrence going into the 2021 NFL draft. He can spread the ball. He can go deep. He has a lot more velocity behind his cannon, and he will be able to connect all across the field. There's so much to like about this. The tandem of what he can do with a guy like Ayuk on the outside, being that vertical presence, showing off that 4.39 speed, all of those elements of what you saw with Jimmy Garoppolo could be doubled because of better quarterback play. I'm telling you guys right now, if you are a fantasy expert or a fantasy guru, you do not want to be sleeping on Brandon Ayuk. Get him at the very end of your draft and prosper. I do believe that he is going to hit 1,000 yards this year. He could have a Marquise Brown-esque type season to where going into next season, we're talking about him as potentially getting a major contract extension. Number five, Quiddy Pay, defensive end, Indianapolis Colts. This is the guy that I feel like every single time we've been talking about players kind of having a really strong season, he's the one that gets brought up the most. And the main reason why is because if you saw what he was able to do in a limited pass rusher role last season, there's two other things that I really like about the Indianapolis Colts and his role with this team. Number one, they brought in Yannick Ngakoue. So the Las Vegas Raiders traded away Ngakoue because they added in Chandler Jones. He's going to be added to this defensive line. And the one thing that I really do like about this more than anything else is that he is somebody who is going to be going up against the number two offensive lineman. So if you have a really good pass protector on the right side of the offensive line, he's going to be playing on the left side of the offensive line. If you have a guy who's a very good run blocker, well, he's going to be playing on the opposite side. So if the run blocker is really good on the left side, he's going to be playing on the right side. It gives you situational matchups. But the other thing is that his pass rush rate went from 4.7% over his first six starts to 10.5% in his final nine starts. So he got better at the line of scrimmage. He also became really effective with his hands, and his vision was on point. I do believe that he could be a guy that gets about 8 to 12 sacks on the year, 10 to 15 tackles for losses, and an elemental factor that really does bode well in favor of Indianapolis' defensive line. We always talk about Indianapolis' offense because of what Frank Reich does. I'll tell you what, keep a close eye on the defense. Like, they have been very, very stable for the last several seasons. Number four, Jeff Okudah, the Detroit Lions. One of the main reasons why Okudah is not getting talked about enough is because he's been injured. Like, that's really been his case. But if you look at what Jeff Okudah brings to the table, he is a really good balanced corner. Last season, his year one, he finished with 51 total tackles, three pass deflections, and an interception. And then last season, he had an Achilles injury that knocked him out in week two. So after that, you know that he's coming back stronger, healthier. And when he was in college, he was what Sauce Gardner was before Sauce Gardner ever existed. Never allowed a touchdown in coverage, has the right size, does a very good job playing in a competitive balance, and was always great in zone scheme. What does Aaron Glenn like to run? A lot of zone. I think he has a breakout year. I think he shows why he was worth a top five selection and why he has the potential to be a can't-miss cornerback going into 2023. Number three, Jerry Jeudy, Denver Broncos. Jeudy has been a very good route runner. Jeudy has been a very consistent receiver as a team's number two. What's been the biggest problem? Quarterback play. Now he has a quarterback. Now not only does he have a quarterback, he has limited competition for that number two spot opposite of Cortland Sutton. With Tim Patrick tearing his ACL, I talked about this, it is a shame to lose a guy like Tim Patrick, but it is a blessing in disguise for Jeudy, who's going to be viewed as that number two receiver. He's a great route runner. He's excellent after the catch. His drop rate has diminished immensely the last 2 years, and Russell Wilson is only going to elevate his game. Keep a close eye on Jeudy to reach 1,000 yards this year, and keep a very close eye on Jeudy to be a difference maker in terms of receptions, especially on third down. That's an area where he has been very good from his days in college. I think that translates to the NFL in year three. Number two, Trevor Lawrence, Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback. Listen, it's very hard for me not to put Lawrence at number one, but the main factor is there's one guy who's in a better situation. Lawrence just needs to get a better coach. Like, that was all it takes. You don't get a guy like Trevor Lawrence and put him on a roster and say, oh, he's going to regress every single year. What he did in Clemson. Now you get Doug Peterson in the building. He also has a really good number one receiver in Christian Kirk, probably better as a number two, but neither tit for tat. Offensive line is good enough. Defense is good enough. I think overall production as itself is just going to continue to develop simply because of the right personnel is in the building to teach him the ins and outs of playing quarterback. But number one, and no surprise, I've mentioned him all the time on the show, and I'll continue to mention him. It's Tua Tagovailoa. Tua has been on point all of training camp, and now he also has a coach believing in him with the likes of Mike McDaniel. They upgraded the offensive line with guys like Teron Armstead and Connor Williams. They're moving Austin Jackson to his natural guard position, and they brought in Tyreek Hill. The bottom line is that there's a run game, there's a good defense, and there's good receivers all around. bet on Tua to be the quarterback we all imagined when drafted number 5 in 2020 by the season's end. They have it. My top 10 breakout players for the 2022 NFL season right here on Just Saying It, part of the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
So for those of you who were wondering about the status of Josh Jacobs with the Las Vegas Raiders, I put that to rest. So everyone started to freak the hell out when he played more than, I think it was three drives. What was that? I think it was like three or four drives with the Raiders on the Hall of Fame game. You know, the one probably preseason game that has absolutely zero value to anyone. And everyone thought that he was on the trading block. No, that's not the case. According to multiple reports, including Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, they believe that they just want to get more reps out of him because if he is in a prove-it year with this organization, keep in mind it is a new regime. Brandon Ziegler comes over, Josh McDaniels comes over, and the team is looking to start fresh on certain aspects that they didn't like about Mike Mayock and John Gruden. Even though I think that Josh Jacobs has been a very serviceable running back, there's a lot for him to still prove. The bottom line, this is a New England Patriot thing. They play their starters throughout the preseason. I really wouldn't be worried. So if you're doing your fantasy league, still pick them up.